bitch please.
Oh, bitch please my ass. You want a sandwich?
Dig that. Oh, hell yeah.
She's a bad man, I'm a black man in a white world.
If I wasn't a Christian man, I'd probably be kicking in your way.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the JB's Low Tech Podcast. And I will start today's show off with a question. What do Mr. Goodwrench and former Gopher wideout have in common? Well, you'll find out next on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
To all you baseball and softball players, it's almost that time of the year, so why wait? Get that glove ready for the new season. Come on down to JB's Glove Repair, where our 40 plus years of experience will have you ready in no time. We do relacing, minor stitching, strap adjustments, or strap reattachment. We also provide a break-in service for that new glove. So visit us at jaybesgloverepair.com. That's jaybees gloverepair.com. That's jaybesgloverepair.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the JB's Low Tech Podcast. On my pre-intro, after the intro music, I asked a question. What does Mr. Goodwrench and being a former Gopher wideout have in common? Well, what they have in common is John Eric Bentley, actor, voice talent, and a friend of mine from the University of Minnesota, and also starred in commercials, sitcoms, soaps. He's a husband, he's a father, and he's an all-around good guy. And I wanted to reach out and talk to him here on the JB's Low-Tech Podcast. How you doing there, John?
What's happening, JB? How you doing, brother?
I'm all right.
No. You got me blushing about all the many titles we carry.
Yes, and I left some off. He does PSAs. Like I said, he's a voice. I was digging through your bios and your Wikipedia pages yesterday, and I was like, I have to stop.
I have a Wikipedia page?
You have a voiceover Wikipedia page. You don't have a regular one, but you have a voiceover one. And I was
really?
Yes. So
I always wonder who writes these things up. that always, because you know, if you don't do it, and all of a sudden it shows up on the internet, I'm like, Sometimes it's kind of like, oh, that's cool. Somebody did that. Maybe it was my manager. Maybe it was my agent. And then you find out somebody else did it. And you're like, whoa, what the heck can anybody create on you?
And that's one of the things you have to worry about out there, John. And I said John Eric Bentley because as I was digging and looking, because I, you know, it's easy for me to say, hey, John, send me some information. But I'd rather go on the internet and
look it up
and learn some things. But one of the things I learned, there was an English actor named John Bentley.
Yes, yes, yes. And he's also a writer, a very prolific writer.
Right.
And he's done some serious work. And the crazy thing with him is that some of his work that he's done on film is in my internet movie database profile. And I've told him for years, that ain't me. I wasn't born there.
Yeah, I was going to say some of the stuff was contributed to you that I saw, and then I looked at the dates. I was like, no, that's not him. That's the other guy.
Yeah, because back to like something was in like 1979.
Right.
Man, I was a kid. I was a single-digit kid in Chicago.
That's what I said to myself. It's like...
Trying to survive a snowstorm. It was right. Like, what? It's funny.
So you mentioned that you started as a child in Chicago. How did you want... Yeah. How did you, from the streets of Chicago, or was it Mount Carmel High School?
Yeah, we went to Mount Carmel High School, yeah.
See, I told you did some digging. And a 6'3 skinny kid from Chicago wind up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, playing football for the Golden Gophers.
Well, I had a buddy, Nate Turner.
Okay.
Who we grew up in Chicago, and we used to play football in the front yard. And if you know anything about Chicago, the front yard was basically just a sidewalk.
Right.
In front of your yes. house or your apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have to wait, you know, to play tackle on the concrete when it snowed.
Yes.
That's when it was really like the front. But you would always have to avoid cars that were parked on the street, butt up against the curb, or trees that people planted on purpose in the middle of their front yards so that folks like us wouldn't tear up their grass.
<Got it.
laughs> So... Yeah, that's where we lay. And then Nate said, "Hey man, you should try to get a scholarship playing football." I'm like, "Man, we already got a scholarship running track." And he said, "No, football is different. They take care of you."
That's
you
true.
Know, and I said, "Okay." And we looked into it. My mom and dad did, you know, because I was just like, "I won't play." And so I played as a freshman, but I was like a 150-pound nose tackle. In the Midwest in Chicago, 150 pounds is not big.
No.
Against, you know,
yeah.
folks, you know, going up against you, especially in the Catholic League. So that as a freshman, I was like, I don't like football. I wanted to either be a running back or a receiver. So I quit, and I wound up playing basketball, running track, playing baseball, doing speech team, all these other different things. So Nate, our senior year, said, you know, you stop playing basketball, so why don't you come back out and play football? It's easy. And I'm like, eh, all right, well, let's see. So in the summer, we tried out, and no one could tackle me. And, you know, I was a little stronger then, much faster. Fast twitch muscles were going from track and
right.
everything else. And wound up making the team. The guy who was playing in front of me, who was coming a returning senior, I wound up beating him out playing. His name was Bugsy. He's a great kid, great dude, great guy now, even in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
He's a part of our law enforcement brave guy in Chicago. But we wound up battling for the spot. I wound up getting it, had a great year, and a bunch of schools were interested. And so Nate's prediction turned out right, and I wound up choosing University of Minnesota because it was far enough away from home, but... but you right. know what I'm saying?
I get that.
But also
close enough. Yep.
You know, for me to drive, you know, whenever I needed to. And close enough for my parents to get on the plane and come see us play and different things like that. So that's why I wound up playing there. And plus the city was clean. Minneapolis,
yes.
St. Paul, clean.
Yes.
It was like, wow, this is different, you know. Had all the lakes, everything else. And my recruiting visit was great. Jason Bruce
mm-hmm.
showed me around. I got to meet, I think, Dennis at the time. Ricky Foggy was there at the time. I got to meet a lot of the players, which is good people. Alan Holt, you know, a lot of these guys made a serious impression on me. Patrick Cummings, a lot of the guys who preceded me made a serious impression on me just in my recruiting visit. Just good dudes and had good things to say. Bruce Holmes, I'm thinking of all
right.
of them now. Just great, great guys, great guys.
Yeah, those are all guys that at one point I helped recruited as a student manager. They allowed me to get involved in recruiting to help bring in guys, especially guys from St. Louis. I totally understand that. You know, you get to host a recruit, you get a little extra money in your pocket that weekend. Because you don't feed the...
Yeah, you guys do.
That's good reason.
Don't be getting you in trouble. The recruiters.
No, got the money.
Yeah, but and the recruitees.
And we tried to feed them as least as possible. No, I'm just kidding. So,
You're crazy.
So did you... I'm trying to piece this together in my mind because I remember a lot, but I forget some things. Did you run track at the U also?
No. My roommate, Willie Young, did.
Okay.
Who's also my frat brother. He ran track. And at one point, I would have had an option to do so, myself as well as my other roommate, Keswick Joyner.
Mm-hmm.
But it turned out that, man, the workload, it's so much to try to do two sports and
right.
on the collegiate level. It's just ridiculous, you know, unless you're just walking in and saying, yeah, I'm going to run my meet and go. You know, half the time you got practice or you got meetings or you got weights.
Right.
And the seasons kind of cross because you have an indoor season, an outdoor season for track. So we never really got a chance to play any other sports. I know a couple of I think years before me, when the basketball team had gotten in trouble,
mm-hmm.
some of the football players who played basketball were able to go and play
yes.
basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was to run track, and those seasons kind of cross each other. They weren't allowed to. I would have loved to have been a triple jump performer. I had a pretty decent triple. I went downstate for triple jump
right.
when I was in Chicago. And I loved running the relays, but I wasn't able to cross and do that. I mean, the workload, like I said, my son's being recruited right now for basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the difference between Division I, II, and III is that at Division III, one, they don't give you a full-on scholarship, so you would either have to apply for that grant, or your parents would pay, or you could have a job on campus. And I'm like, ha, 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 I just laughed at them when they said you can have a job on campus.
Right.
Because I know the workload for playing sports on a collegiate level, you don't have time.
And
you know, you eat, live, drink,
right.
breathe, sleep, whatever sport you're in.
Well,
so it would have been too tough.
Well, I left the athletic department 2 years ago this month, and the request on the young athlete's time has gotten even worse. So, I mean,
yeah, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it.
I mean, they literally live from getting up to lifting weights, to going to class, to practice, to a meeting either before or after, getting something to eat, and then going back for studying. So, I mean, it's just, and then by the time all that's done, they tried to carve in a social life and try to get some
yeah.
sleep. Now, they made it a little easier for the young people at the University of Minnesota. They built an addition to Bierman, and it's called
really?
The Athletic Village. And inside the Athletic Village is a cafeteria. So all athletes walk on our scholarship gets dinner. And if you have a meal plan, you can have lunch and breakfast and lunch there also. And any student any student on campus, if they have a meal plan, can also eat there. So
that's outstanding.
Yeah, it grew leaps and bounds with that one move. There's also two basketball practice facilities within there, one for women and one for the men.
Wow.
There was a new football practice facility built. So the one that you were in now has been taken over by baseball, softball, and soccer.
The indoor one or
yep.
the one that was outside?
The indoor one, because they built a new indoor
wow.
one over there also. So
wow. That's good to know, man, because, you know, you failed to mention the first time you were describing that, food. And that's a huge thing, seriously, because we would have to plan out in our day where we were going to eat or when
right.
we were going to eat. And 9 times out of 10, it was usually at your dorm.
Right.
So you have to go back and forth to your dorm. You wake up in the morning, you go get breakfast, if you ate breakfast because you're running, and then you go to practice or you go to film or you go whatever, and then you go to school, and you come back and you have lunch, you have to go back to the dorm, regardless of where your classes were. Then you have practice, and then you have film or lifting, and then you eat dinner, and you have to do all that back at the dorm, and then you do homework, and you go. I mean, it's just like Groundhog Day
right.
times 20,
yep.
you know. But the crazy thing is that during the summer, we were in three-a-days.
Right.
And I don't think that's even legal anymore.
No more three-a-days, and you can only go two-a-day every other day.
Wow. Yeah, so that's different.
Right. Whereas, you're right. Whereas back when you were playing and when I was a student manager, there was three practices, you know, Monday through Friday, and then you probably had one or two on Saturday. So you yep. got lucky if you got Saturday evening and the whole day is Sunday off. But don't.
Yeah, but you were worn down.
Right.
I mean, even though we're young and we would find ways to try to go out to, you know, Dinky Town at the time when they had a little club, or
right.
everybody would hang out at Rocky Rococo's, which yeah. I know is no longer there.
No, nope, does not
know,
exist.
You're so worn out. You'd fall asleep wherever you were. So it's very interesting.
Yeah. Matter of fact, that location where Rocky Rococo's sat, a former Gopher offensive lineman before you named Bill Humphreys, who had the son Chris Humphreys, the basketball mm-hmm. player, they own mm-hmm. a restaurant there now called Crispin Greens. It's
nice.
It's an upscale salad place. So
vegetarian yep. place?
Huh?
Nice.
Yep.
Nice.
So
that's cool. It's
yep.
nice to hear that a former Gopher owns property, you know, in that little village.
Yep. He also up the like across the street and up and right where the McDonald's came down. Fourth.
Wow, the McDonald's isn't there anymore?
Nope, it's gone. They just took it
wow.
out. They just took it out. Like wow. a couple of months ago. But they're going to throw an apartment complex and there's going to be a smaller McDonald's in there. But up the street from
right
that.
Right in the middle there?
Yeah.
Wow. You'll put an apartment complex in the middle of Dinky Town?
You wouldn't believe all the apartment complexes that are in Dinky Town and on campus.
Really?
Yes. They don't.
Wow.
They don't commute anymore. They all want to live on campus in luxury apartments.
Jeez.
Yeah. I mean,
that's kind of how it is out here on the West Coast, man. My son, we went to visit Utah and Oregon and Arizona. The places are right there. Here in
right.
California too. The kids wake up, they go straight to school. They do their thing. And a lot of them work on campus as well. So that's how it is.
You remember the location of Marshall University High School?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that is now on the ground floor is a Target.
What?
And above it is
oh my God.
Is luxury apartments.
Wow.
And there are some other restaurants connected to that. But, yeah, it's that whole area 3, 4, 5 years ago just went over and makeover. You know, House of Hanson's gone.
Nice.
The only thing
wow.
the only thing that's left that you would probably probably remember is Al's Breakfast.
That's still there.
That's,
wow, that's cool.
And we had to basically the city had to step in and fight and save Al's as a historic landmark, or Al's.
That's cool.
Al's would be gone too, because somebody.
What's that? Is the student union still on campus?
Yes.
Okay, at least I said. Yeah. I haven't been back to Minneapolis since 2017, and that was to bury my wife's father.
Okay.
And so I never got to see the campus at all. And the last time I was actually on campus. I brought my family to Minneapolis. I'm trying to remember if we brought my family to Minneapolis to see where I played and everything. And we saw the basketball. The new aquatic center was the
yeah.
thing at the time.
Yep.
And that was shortly after I had come back for. They had an anniversary game at the new stadium. And it was like, oh, okay, cool. So, but yeah, I haven't been there for a while on campus, but you know, still get all the alumni letters for money.
Yeah. So,
that's interesting. So, with all the unrest that's going on in Minneapolis right now,
we'll get to that, John.
Does it affect the campus?
We'll get.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
I know you are. Because I still want to talk about you. And that's why I'm having you.
Oh, man, yeah. I'm not that dude. Go ahead, ask what you want. I'll give you short answers.
No, we're like going to finish up like your athletic time. You know, you made it through. You did get a degree, right?
Oh, yeah. I got my undergraduate degree. It's an interesting story. I was going to quit my last year. I was so fed up with our coaching staff.
Yeah.
And I'm just being blatantly, brutally honest, and half the stuff I want to say, I probably won't say just because I'm more mature now, and I've grown up, John.
Right.
but no. On the real, I hated playing under the coaching staff that we had. I think our recruiting class was one of the top recruiting classes of the time in the Big Ten, and many of us did not play.
Yeah.
I think two of us played, and don't get me wrong, we had outstanding players on the squad. But, you know, management of a team is not an easy task, so I get it.
Right.
But, you know, during that time, I was so fed up with everything. I'm like, is it worth it? But my mom was an educator.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, you know, you got a scholarship. We were able to buy a house, get your degree. You know, and I was hammered into me,
right.
Especially coming from the crib to Chicago. And so the last year, I was so frustrated with everything. I'm like, it's not worth it, Keswick Jordan, my roommate at the time, was like, yo, man, you can't quit. What's wrong with you? He went and told Vince Fuller, who worked there at the time. He was my frat brother as well.
Right.
Vince was like, man, come into my office. And Vince talked to me, and he was like, you can't quit. And I'm like, ah. He's like, think about this. And he gave me a list of things to think about. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I wound up not quitting, wound up getting my degree. Brian Berube was like, you do realize that you have one requirement left, and it's your language requirement. Because you will have already been done with football, we can send you to Mexico to get your language requirement basically to, like, you know, times 10 because
right.
you're immersed in Mexico. I'm like, what? So I finished my undergraduate in speech, English, and theater, and then someone had presented me the idea, hey, you know, you can get another scholarship for grad school. I'm like, what are you talking about? And it was through theater. So I did this thing called Urban Repertory Theater Advancement. I think it's advancement. URTAS is what it's called. You audition, you do two pieces. You basically do a theater piece. You do a contemporary piece, and you do a classical piece. So I chose Shakespeare and August Wilson and wound up performing those two pieces in order to get a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Wound up getting more offers than I did for football, 14 or I think it was 18 offers to go to a college on scholarship for my master's degree. So I chose to stay in Minneapolis because, one, I was already established. Two, I was working for a non-union agency. Three, and the main reason was because the Guthrie was there. So I'm
right.
like, the Guthrie is here. You know, I can go work anywhere, repertory, if I want afterwards. So I wound up doing that for 3 years, teaching and all this. We had a class of three. They usually take a class of six. It narrowed it down to three. They only chose one of us. They usually take half of your class
mm-hmm.
to go to the Guthrie and study on. They chose one of us to take to go on to the Guthrie. So two of us were like, hey, wait a minute. There's only three, so we know you got the spot. But it was like, whatever. And for me, I was like, all right, cool. That was their choice. I had to make my choice.
Right.
Football and being under the uncomfortable position that I was with the coaching staff prepared me so much for life. It prepared me for
yeah.
what happened in grad school with, oh my gosh, here's this controversy where you won't be going to the Guthrie. I mean, it just prepared sports by far prepare you for life, but my experience prepared me for a lot of the things that people would call lemons that I was able to say, okay, we're going to make this into lemonade.
Right.
So went on to say, okay, finished there, wound up out here. My other buddy, David Ivers, who was the other one who wasn't chosen, while he runs a major, major theater out here in California right now. So it's very interesting how, you know, life, what you do with your choices when you're in a situation. But it's beautiful when you go, hey, I played football. For, you know,
right.
at a different level. And that has prepared me for life. As a matter of fact, I remember playing, and I was doing scout team 1 week, and the Bengals were there. And they said, hey, we want to offer you a chance to come out to our camp and try out.
Right.
And so at the end of my football year, I had to make a decision to, do I go to the Bengals camp and try out, or do I go on to take this master's degree? And, you know, it was a tough choice because I was still raw in football. I remember one of my teammates called me green. I had no idea at the time what green meant. I thought he was just talking about me. Anthony Bryant. Anthony said, "Yeah, he green." And I was like, I didn't realize that meant he didn't know what the hell he was doing. And I didn't.
Yeah,
I was a 17-year-old freshman. Mm-hmm. I'd only played 1 year of varsity football and in high school, and was like, all right, I'm going to take the scholarship to help my parents and get my education. So I had a different mindset coming in. And so, yeah, I was so new to the game and, you know, actually had just come off of an injury from the first year where I had to have orthoscopic surgery on my knee. And this is crazy, man, but it all prepared me for a lot of the things that I do now. And I'll tell you a story about that once we get into the whole, film stuff. Because working with Michael Bay mm-hmm. was like working with a coach.
Okay. Well, to kind of finish up your time at the U, the reason why I asked you, did you run track there, was because I was finishing up my time, and I wasn't a student manager anymore, but I was like a part-time worker over in the Bierman building. And you would mm-hmm. always come beg me for running tights to get me in trouble.
Oh, yeah, because they were the bomb.
Get me in trouble.
You got to know. Because the running tights, first of all, you could wear the tights under the uniform. It was, you know, so I always wore compression tights when I ran track in high school. And the reason being is because it kept my legs warm, and it actually was cool. It was almost like saying, okay, I got to protect my hamstrings. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's what it did. And so I would try to wear them. That's hilarious. You remember that. I would try to wear them at every practice. And every, you know, it was like, because at the time, we didn't have access to them. We didn't have them. Now everybody's got them.
I was just going to say, you wouldn't believe the amount of compression stuff they get now. And I've said this before on my podcast, every year, it's like 10 years ago, we signed an all-school deal with Nike. Every year, mm-hmm. I would give each of my athletes about a $5,000 wardrobe. And then the next year, a new $5,000. John, the stuff that those kids walk out with now would blow you guys' mind.
Oh, I know. I'm sitting here right now, wearing a University of Minnesota shirt that we used to wear for practice. Believe it or not, I still have it. It's got holes all in it, but I'm like, man, when I went back home and went to Dinky Dome to try to see how much one of those cost, I'm like, let me go over to Bierman and see if they got something. I'm like, this is crazy.
That stuff to the general public is very expensive, but they... You know, it's given to them, and I swear there's a quarter of it that's nothing more but for them to walk around to go to class and lounge in their apartment.
Think about it, though, John. You think about it. It's self-promotion as well. It's a great thing when you really think about it. That kid will wear that to the Mall of America. That kid mm-hmm. will wear that wherever they go. Even during this crazy time in COVID, if you're sporting your gear in places, you are promoting that university. You are flossing, for the kids that maybe athletes mm-hmm. who are up and coming who want to play, you know? So, I mean, it's very strategical and very wise, but, you know, that's another conversation we'll probably get into with the NCAA changing all these rules
But, it's Harry. I don't know if you knew Harry Broadfoot. He was a short... black equipment manager, full-time equipment manager.
Who was it?
Harry Broadfoot. He did.
No, I remember you and Maddie.
Right.
Maddie's little son.
Right.
Who else was there?
Harry did basketball, and then was...
Yeah, I didn't know Harry. I knew Mark was there. Big Mark was there too. I'm trying to remember who else was there.
Right.
It was you, Mark, Maddie. Oh, there's two other cats.
You probably knew
Todd.
I was going to say you probably knew Todd.
Yep.
So, but as Harry would always say about the stuff, because Harry and Maddie, before they retired, had to deal a little bit with the Nike stuff. You know, it was in their last couple of years, and Harry looked at me one day and he goes, "We're all whores for Nike and the University of Minnesota."
For the gear.
And that's
make good equipment, man.
Right. And that's what, basically, I don't want to use the word whore, but, you know, like you said, we're selling the university and we're selling Nike. So, but you're also wearing very good technical clothing. So,
yeah, literally. My gear now, right. Nike. I would choose Nike over most of the things that I wear, for especially for shoes. But most of the gear that I wear, especially if I'm going to a colder climate, the thermal stuff that Nike has. Don't get me wrong, Under Armour has some serious stuff, but mm-hmm. Under Armour shoes, for basketball at least, were inferior compared to what Nike was putting out until Steph came along.
Right.
Steph Curry's shoes were, you know, up to par. But don't sleep on All-Star. Converse is coming back with
yes.
a line of shoes that's no joke.
Well, you know Nike privately, secretly.
Oh, no, I know.
Owns Converse.
They own them. They own them. And that's why they're doing so dang well, because they changed the structure of their shoes. They
right.
their shoes. And Adidas, I have no clue what happened to Adidas. I know Harden brand was really, really solid. And then I remember my son was playing in Harden's, and this was when they first came out. The shoe couldn't withstand the multiple games that they would play at AAU level, just from the sweat alone.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, they look great, but the structure is falling apart. But it was just like, man, you know, Adidas, and don't get me wrong, Adidas got some nice things that you can wear around.
Right.
And they protect your feet, and they're comfortable and everything else. But it was all about the gear.
Right.
You know, I was like, what kind of gear? Adidas was hot when we were coming up because of Run DMC.
Right.
You know,
and,
so you
and
think
also,
about all the changes.
Also, Adidas' mission was to eliminate Champion. Nike's mission
yes.
was to eliminate Adidas, and now Under
Armour. Nike's mission was to eliminate everybody.
Right. And and Under Armour's mission was to eliminate Nike. So I just wanted
to. But you got to understand, but Under Armour, though, John, Under Armour's compression stuff was better than anyone's on the market at one point.
Yes, that's true.
Anyone. I'm talking about uppers and lowers.
Right.
Under Armour stuff was like, that's what I'm getting. I don't care what I wear underneath. No one will see the logo because I'm trying
right.
to match up my logos, you know, whatever it was. Under Armour's compression stuff was on point. And then, you know, everybody else got in the game and was like, yo.
Yeah. So, it did make Nike pivot into directions they hadn't thought of and do things. But I didn't want to bring it up to have a full discussion on athletic clothing. I just wanted to remind you how you used to try
oh, yeah.
to get me in trouble.
I came to you all the time. I didn't try to get you in trouble. I just told you nobody would know. Because back then, they didn't have cameras.
Right.
They could have thought, hey, his parents just sent him some maroon tights that nobody really makes.
Well, you did have a track roommate, so.
Yes, I did. He was no joke.
And they were the one and only sport who got that stuff back then.
Man, he got everything. But because he was smaller than me and Cass, we couldn't wear any of that junk. I was like, oh, got these skinny tights. They don't fit nobody well.
So
and then his was on the limit. They wouldn't even give him a certain
right.
amount. Because track, I think at the time, track athletes, their scholarship was partial depending on what they did and I think the GPA or something. It was crazy. So he couldn't get like whatever he wanted. Like
right.
I said, football, baseball, and basketball, man, whole different level
well,
of scholarship.
They all, clothing-wise, they all get everything, no matter what sport they are. It doesn't
now. You mean
now? It doesn't matter if you're a walk-on
yeah.
or if you're a scholarship athlete, because
that's outstanding.
And this can lead us on to the discussion you wanted to have about changes in the NCAA, and that's part of the changes in the NCAA, is they're so afraid of being sued because the O'Bannon court case, Ed O'Bannon,
mm-hmm.
who sued over his likeness and image in a video
mm-hmm.
game. They are
mm-hmm.
so afraid of that turning the college athletic world so upside down. They feed them all day long. They clothe them like crazy. They make sure they graduate. The graduation, you remember how bad the graduation rate was when you were in school. The graduation
yeah.
rates now are like 70% to 80% to 90%, depending on the team. I mean, football is like it's 70.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because... They
I did not know
they
that.
Make sure that you get out of there with a degree. They make sure that you're always fed. I mean, even during the time where like you may have missed meals,
mm-hmm.
in that cafeteria is a snack bar that they have access to with their card, with their ID card. They swipe it, go in there, and take as much as they want and go home, go study, go do whatever they're going to do. Yeah, so this is all
done. Man, we miss meals. You're either hungry for the day or the night, or you pass out.
But this is all done to slow down what's going to eventually happen, which is going to be paying them, either in the form of cost of attendance. And cost of attendance is that gap between what even a full ride pays and what the athlete still needs to have to live comfortably. That's called the cost of attendance. Or
what? So do they get a stipend?
Nothing yet, but that's what they're trying to figure out. How do they take care of that? You know, and
wow. So that means laundry,
right?
Obviously, like the meals are provided, extra meals. Wow, that's deep.
Yeah, I mean, now
that's deep, bro.
The trap door is if it's a stipend, you don't have to worry about paying taxes, this, that, and the other. If you pay athletes, now they got to pay taxes. Somebody's going to try to unionize them, which Northwestern voted on like 3 years ago.
I know.
And they were a full gung-ho until a local Chicago union rep came in and spoke to them and told them that, okay, you may want to be a union, and that's all great, and you think that'll give you power, which it will. But these are the things on the back end that you got to think about, paying taxes.
Oh, yeah. You got union dues. You got taxes. I mean, I'm part of one of the biggest unions, I think, in the United States with the SAG-AFTRA. And it's like, you got to come out of your pocket, too. You got to pay to play.
So, and he was trying to get them to understand that it ain't all going to be we get. There's going to still be some you give. And that's
the responsibility on our end.
Right, and that's when the Northwestern athletes voted it down. They're like, okay, nope, we understand, we get it. But they understood they needed to push for – and I'm not going to say that they're not deserving what they're getting now, because they are.
Mm-hmm.
They make millions for their their schools. And even if they're even if they're on a team that doesn't make millions, they're still on TV repping that university and that sport. They earn
in some shape, form, or fashion.
Right.
They do.
So they earn what I had talked about earlier, the meals and the clothing and the tutoring and all those things. I mean, there's a full 5-floor academics piece that was also built in that athletic village. Well, not 5, 2 floors. But yeah.
As far as tutoring and everything.
Tutoring,
like that.
Interview, like
fake
interviews, whatever you think would fall under that, you know, life skills and all that stuff. It's all housed in that. So it's if they want to and really pay attention and apply themselves, they walk out with a degree and the skills to continue on. And I see it all the time now. Some of them are making their own ventures and have their own ideals and start their own little business or corporations and this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, it's – and the other piece of it is, John, people like Bobby Bell and Trent Tucker and Marion Barber II and whatnot, who all left the university without a degree, all came back to finish their degrees. And the university pays for that.
Wow, that's outstanding. I didn't know Marion didn't finish.
No, he didn't finish, but he did a couple of years ago. And Trent did it a year before or after Marion did. And then, because Marion's son, Marion III, he left with a degree. Mm-hmm. So, and
that's outstanding that they still had the wherewithal to come back.
Right.
Because at the time when I was coming up, there were a lot of folks who did not come back. To finish their degree, who went on to play in the NFL, as well as a major level in the NBA. There are folks who left who did not come back and finish their degree. So that's a beautiful thing to hear.
Yeah, I mean, it is a Big Ten initiative to have that happen. The University of Minnesota actually stepped up before the Big Ten made an initiative. but it's not Division One wide or even Power Five wide. But
outstanding.
Yeah, the Big Ten offer that opportunity to come back and finish up. And, you know, Bobby, let's face it, at that point, Bobby Bell had played pro football, done other things in his life, voted in the Hall of Fame, and done other things. And they had a reunion of one of their teams at the University of Minnesota, and his coach, before he died, asked Bobby to come back and finish his degree, and Bobby did, which was great. You know, just, you know, it was... And also it lit a fuse for the guys much younger than him to come back and do that. It's like,
and
hey,
he was right.
Right. If he can do that, I can go back and do that.
It's good to know that they did right by them.
Right.
They listened to Coach, and that says a lot in itself, that they would even listen to Coach and say, hey, I want to do this right, and Coach is encouraging me to do this. I'm telling you, a coach in any kid's life, in any player's life, that is a positive impact on them means a lot. I don't think people understand the importance of parenting,
yes,
the importance of leadership, the importance of coaches, the importance of teachers, how they can shape, mold, and influence a kid's life or a young adult's life for the better or for the worse. I don't think people, I think that concept has been lost here in our Western culture. The understanding of that position of leadership and that position of influence that you have on someone's life, especially at a young age. And that's something that I really pray and hope that it comes back within our culture, because that's what will groom us into understanding trust, love, which I think conquers a multitude of sins, and people's opinions and attitudes and everything that we're dealing with, we're seeing right now. And it also brings a sense of unity that allows us to act on accord as at least try to hear one another and communicate. And, you know, that's a huge deal. It's a huge deal. Whether it be an athlete, a student athlete, or whether it be just an athlete or a student, or whether it be just a general kid going to school, you know? So it's a big deal.
Well, what you're talking about is mentorship. And, yeah, we all need mentors. I was lucky to have one in high school who helped get me on to college. And, you know, I was lucky also to have both parents at home. And I shouldn't say lucky.
Yeah.
I was blessed to have both parents at home.
And that's even what it is, a blessing. You're right.
Right. And even if they're not both in the house, they should still both be involved in a child's life. And then other adults should be, you know, the topping on the sundae, you know.
Big time.
You know, the whipped cream and the cherry and the sprinkles. You know,
big
the,
time.
The
it
other
it takes a village.
Right.
It takes a village, brother. I mean, I was fortunate enough to have both parents as well. Even though my dad had a crazy schedule with what he did, he was at home and he cared. He would go to every event that he possibly could. He would say, hey, what's going on with school? Even though he only had a seventh grade education.
Right.
My mom, who's a teacher, who overcompensated for that, trust me. But and she did everything she could to go to all my events. But I also had uncles and aunts who were part of the movement for SNCC. And they marched and they were arrested in Walgreens and Woolworths. And, you know, so I had a whole village, like we're saying, of folks who were educators and people who could say, hey, look, this is what went down. This is what's going on. This is what you need to do. So when you have that influence of adults around you that you allow to speak into your lives, it can change the trajectory of, you know, what is predicted to happen. It's interesting you said, how does this little skinny kid from Chicago, you know, get to this point? And I always look at it and go, me and my buddy grew up thinking, man, we would count it off. As a black man, if we make it to 13, we're going to be good.
Yeah.
Oh, we made it to 13. If we make it to 15, and I'm talking about death.
Right.
If we make it to 15, then we're good. If we make it out of the hood, we're good. If we make it to 17, we are golden. Oh, my gosh, we're in college? if I go back home and I make it to 19, that, you know, we have points where we would sit and go, well, we're only projected to make it to 25. You know, and I'm like, well, how do we beat those damn odds? How do we beat them? When we think, when it's programmed in us to think that, how do we beat those odds? So if you don't have somebody coming alongside of you saying, hey, you can do this, then it's tough.
Well, I'm going to take a commercial break here, John.
Take that break, John.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about your talk a little bit about your family, get a little bit back into your acting career, and then we'll get into the heavy stuff that you want to talk about also.
Yeah, I want to know what's happening on campus, man.
Yeah, we'll get to the heavy stuff too. But also, every week I have a question of the week or quote of the week. And so while I'm at the commercial break, I want to ask you this question, and I want you to think about it and see if you have an answer for me when we come back. And okay. The question is, you know, in the world of rapping and hip hop and all of that stuff, there have been songs that have been beef songs. You know, I got beef against this person. I got beef against that person. Before rap was even a thought in people's head, there was the ultimate original beef song. And I'm going to ask you when I come back who you think it was, who sung it, and what it was about. So who wrote the original beef song and what it was all about here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Mike Bryant, and I'm driving my car safely and legally communicating on my phone. Minnesota law allows a driver to use their cell phone to make calls, text, listen to music or podcasts, and get directions by voice command or single-touch activation without holding your phone. Violations are very expensive.
The National Safety Council reports that cell phone use while driving leads to 1.6 million crashes per year, and nearly 400,000 injuries are caused by texting and driving. Not surprising, since 4 seconds with your eyes off the road is like driving the length of a football field blindfolded. And research shows that just 2 seconds increases the risk of an accident up to 24 times. Texting may only take a second, but it can end your life or ruin it forever. Please, drive safely and stay alive.
Find Bradshaw and Bryant, personal injury attorneys at MinnesotaPersonalInjury.com.